From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, the regular co-host and engineer. Al Martin had his flight delayed again. It's the travel curse, folks. That's what he deems it, and rightfully so. But you know what? We're going to hold it down because it is day one of MSU's college football season. I cannot wait. And we had a friendly reminder last night of just how chaotic the course of a season can be. Parody. That's what everybody calls it. That's what they should call it, because Tennessee almost went down to Appalachian State 20-13 in overtime, just 9 years after the greatest upset of the 21st century, Appalachian State over Michigan, occurred. And then we're going to also talk about, of course, MSU's football game against Furman, what to look for, whether it'll be close whatsoever, what the chances are that we see an Appalachian State-Tennessee-type game. Of course, we'll talk about that. And I was at the Lansing Catholic game last night. You'll hear from head coach Jim Ahern of Catholic, as well as transfer quarterback Michael Lynn, about how they are adapting to the start of the season. They're 2-0 at this point. Then Stephen Olshansky, he'll be on our radio waves for the first time, beat reporter for the State News about MSU football. So we're going to get the full lowdown on everything Spartans today. And last but not least, you know that we're going to hit you with Reflection Friday, remembering the best of the week. And there was quite a lot to remember. The Colin Kaepernick saga keeps on getting more and more deep. So I can't wait to talk about any of it. If you want to call in, chime in, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But hey, let's start the show like we always do with your current sports quick hit headliners. First in the world of high school football in the area, Alma faced Shepherd, and Alma took the lead early, held on to it, 28-14, the final score there. Bath over Potterville, 46-0, not even close. Lakewood, 44. Belding, 30. Corunna beat Swartz Creek, 31-8, and then East Kentwood toppled East Lansing, 29-7. Hazlitt won over Flushing in a low-scoring affair. Just a few field goals involved there. And Hazlitt won 9-6. Fowler scored 41 over Saranac, 41-20, the final score in that one. Fowlerville, 38 over Charlotte with 24. Actually, a very impressive win there for Fowlerville. Langsburg, 37. Fulton, 26. Grand Ledge, 28. DeWitt, 21 in one of the most important games of the season, just happening in high school week two of the season. Then Hudsonville beat Holt 38-7. That was a curb stomp. Ithaca 42, St. Charles 0, Lansing Catholic 31, Everett 12, but closer game than the score indicates. I can tell you that for a fact. Waverly 48, Lansing Eastern 6, Brooklyn Columbia Central 46, Leslie 26, Mason 28, Eaton Rapids 7, Okemos 30, Ann Arbor Skyline 6, Overdalsy 37, Pinconning 6, Ionia got 34, and Owosso only 13, Pawama Westphalia with one of the best running backs with Jacob Smith in the business, 64, Dansville 0, Portland 40, Hillsdale 0, Stockbridge 48, Royal Oak 36, Weberville 38, Tekonsha 14, and then Grand Rapids Catholic Central 48 over St. John's with just 15. Holly beat Williamston 35-28 in a close affair. And Parchment 31, Maple Valley just 6. Also, college football took place last night, the first significant matchup games going on last night. And Charlotte lost to Louisville 14-70. Appalachian State 13-20 against Tennessee. Tennessee pulling that one out in overtime. Tulane, the New Orleans boys, lost to Wake Forest 7-3. Connecticut over Maine 24-21. Central Michigan 49, Presbyterian 3. Cincinnati 28, UTM 7. Indiana, Big Ten team, 34. Florida International University just 13. William and Mary put up 14, but not enough to beat North Carolina State, who had 48 on the day. South Carolina versus Vanderbilt, a Southern rivalry, 13-10 in favor of the Gamecocks. South Carolina taking that one in a nail biter. Southern Utah lost to Utah 0-24. Weber State 6, Utah State 45, Rice 14, Western Kentucky 46. Oregon State went down to Minnesota 23-30, South Dakota 21, New Mexico 48, UNLV beating Jackson State 63-13, Idaho beating Montana State 20-17. That wraps it up for your college football overview from last night. But there was more than just games on tap. Donnie Corley was the obvious standout in the finale of Green and White Days Inside Michigan State Training Camp Trilogy. It was a small spotlight on Corley, but it did show the excitement that is buzzing around the freshman wide receiver. After the first commercial break, the 6'2", 186-pound Detroit export made a slow-mo corkscrew catch in traffic on a sweetly dropped-in pass from starting quarterback Tyler O'Connor. The show provided a window into the Spartans' final scrimmage of preseason camp, which was curtailed because of weather. The final shot of the episode and series was of O'Connor heading off the practice field after D'Antonio led out the players from their final camp responsibilities. O'Connor carried his helmet in one hand and red jersey in the other. In slow motion, he walked underneath the Earn the Jersey banner. Pretty cinematic right there. Jake Rudock made one heck of a case to be the Lions' second-string quarterback behind Matthew Stafford. Darren Orlovsky starred last night, who took over for Matthew Stafford, who was one of many starters who was rested for the game. But Rudock came in confidently, completing 14 of 23 passes for a team preseason high 171 yards and three touchdowns in a 31-0 home romping over the Buffalo Bills. This preseason, Rudock led the Lions with four touchdowns and a 96.3 passer rating this preseason, also adding 62 yards on 10 carries. However, he failed to complete a single pass against the Baltimore Ravens in preseason week 3. The Lions have just 27 hours from right now, 1 o'clock Eastern, till Saturday at 4 p.m. to trim off the fat and cut the roster down to the NFL limit 53 players. One Lion won't be there to find out his official roster spot. However, Tyron Walker will be heading down to New Iberia, Louisiana to help his family and his community in their recovery following the destructive Baton Rouge area floods. Big ups to Walker for that. Seattle Seahawks cornerback Jeremy Lain sat down during the national anthem before last night's preseason game against the Oakland Raiders. He said he did so to show adjuvant support for San Francisco quarterback Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick and teammate Eric Reed also kneed during the national anthem before the 49ers' night game against the Chargers in San Diego on Thursday. Kaepernick sauntered onto the field to a reception of largely boos. Reed said he thought that kneeling showed the proper reverence for soldiers in comparison to actually sitting. Kaepernick again was in the news this week after wearing socks. And again, he had done it for some time before we actually took notice, but that displayed police officers caricatured as pigs. This is you ain't going anywhere. That wraps it up for your current sports quick hit headliners. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527 to be a part of the show. Let's get started.
It'll be Jason Gingell out of the hole to Mesko. Good snap, good hold, and the kick is blocked! Appalachian State has stunned the college football world, one of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Backed up now, about the two, hurt. No, keeping it, Dobbs dives and stuck! Ball is loose in the end zone. The officials congregate. Tennessee, some of the players signaling touchdown. Josh Dobbs, touchdown. Wow. Recovered in the end zone. It looks like Hurd, it looks like Jalen Hurd was one of those on the bottom. We'll take a look at this.
Josh Dobbs got shaken up. Watch him extend this football. He gets hit right in the chest. I think that was Gilchrist. And the ball comes out. You always got to be careful about extending the football if it's not forced down near the goal line, because this can happen. This was almost a disaster. We saw Jalen Hurd fumble earlier in the second half. Very fortunate that they were able to get that back. And, you know, I love the effort by Joshua Dobbs. It's kind of reminiscent of John Elway in the Super Bowl against the Packers. He kind of got helicoptered there down by the goal line, but very, very lucky break for Tennessee here to fall on that football.
Welcome to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constantine. Can we just take a moment to kind of shriek together? Just, oh my God, football's back. You know, college football is back. And you heard that in the intro that I compiled. Tennessee versus Appalachian State. Almost reminiscent of 9 years ago, the nine-year anniversary yesterday of Michigan falling to Appalachian State on a blocked field goal. Tennessee almost met a very similar fate. They just beat Appalachian State 20-13. It was really a heartbreaker if you're a fan of underdogs like I am. Tennessee, the number 9 team in the nation, overrated as always. One of those teams much like USC and Notre Dame, although Notre Dame is reversing that tale that always seems to get the benefit of the doubt from the voters, never seems to deserve it, always seems to get it. But Appalachian State, no longer an FCS school. They're now in the FBS, and they gave U of M a run for their money. Tennessee had to go on a 17-0 run in order to beat the Mountaineers of Appalachian State. Really good game throughout. And Tennessee, a team with their fair share of star power. You see Josh Dobbs at quarterback, 16 of 29 last night, 192 yards, one touchdown, one interception. But somebody who a lot of people primed for real success and real grit this year in terms of what he'd be able to do against a stingy SEC opposition throughout the course of the year. Then you also see Jalen Hurd, the running back, and he was good last night. 28 carries, 110 yards, a touchdown, and that touchdown was very, very important. It was in the run. Well, you could say it was a run. It was a run from Josh Dobbs. And you heard the commentator say, with a John Elway-esque dive over the pile line, here's the difference between Josh Dobbs and John Elway. One for a Super Bowl. It was against Appalachian State, not the Green Bay Packers. John Elway was tough. He was probably smart in doing so. It was the only way he could cross it. Josh Dobbs was stuffed a yard and a half out of the end zone, fumbled the ball. The ball bounced around fortuitously for Tennessee, and then Jalen Hurd jumped on it, won the Volunteers the game. Appalachian State did have a drive afterwards. That's the rules of college football. You've got each team has a drive. You start at the 25, and you've got however many downs to try to match the other team's score, or if possible, beat it. And after complete rounds, then you can start tallying up who the winner is. So basically, if Appalachian State would have only kicked a field goal, they would have lost. They didn't score whatsoever, so they lost. They would have scored a touchdown, kicked the extra point, they would have drawn it out to another overtime, but they weren't able to do so. And if they would have, you know, gone for two after scoring a touchdown, again, they didn't score the touchdown in the first place, they would have won. That's just the way college football goes. But Appalachian State, in my opinion, was a little conservative to start off that series when it was their chance for a rebuttal. They ran it a few times, and at the end of the day, it just was not working for them. At the end of it, they had to go deep, but it wasn't enough. So they had an incomplete pass on first and 10, then Taylor Lamb, the quarterback, completed it to Deltron Hopkins just for 4 yards, though. It was just a dump off. Marcus Cox ran for 1 yard. Tennessee called a timeout, and then Taylor Lamb incomplete to Shaden Metters, Micah Abernathy with the coverage there, and Tennessee escapes. But this is the classic situation of SEC East teams. being overrated. When you look at the SEC, there are two different divisions within it and a lot of stratification in terms of talent within it. You've got Alabama and LSU, who are the perennial powers and really the only two who deserve constant lauding from the rankings and all of that. But outside of LSU and Alabama, you've got a lot of up and down. Again, the word is parity. Sometimes Auburn will go on and have a Heisman-winning quarterback like Cam Newton win the championship, come back from 28 down from Bama, and then actually win that game 31-28. You know, I'm an LSU fan too, so I just got to rub it in whenever Bama faces a tough loss. But the SEC East is always, always overrated. You can count on it. You can bet on it. Georgia, Tennessee, they're always going to be overrated. Kirby Smart, now the coach of Georgia, and Butch Jones, the coach of Tennessee. And they always go 9-3 or something, play in the SEC championship, get smacked by one of the SEC West powers, and then don't do really anything else. But that's my rant, and nobody really cares about the SEC right now. It's just a cool moment since it happened exactly 9 years after Appalachian State beat Michigan on that block field goal attempt, 34-32, the final score there. Lloyd Carr coaching number 5 Michigan Wolverines back then. That's your flashback Friday for the day. But, of course, everybody's focused around one game. And we're going to be talking about that throughout the course of the hour. We've actually got a great guest to make up for Al's absence. Of course, he, again, had a flight that was delayed. The travel curse for him. But Stephen Olshansky, beat reporter for the State News about Michigan State football, will be joining me right around the 1:30 mark. So in about 15 minutes, stay tuned for that. But my thoughts from this game, all right, here we go. A lot of people are trying to always say, just for caution's sake, you know, let's not really get too caught up about it. Game's a game, no matter who you're playing. It's Furman. We got to play them just like we would Michigan or Ohio State. The thing is, Furman was 4-7 last year, and they're in the FCS. They lost to Chattanooga 31-3. One of their star players, Deion Sanders, a running back, is already out for the season. And Michigan State comes in, home night game, their sixth straight. It's a Friday night too, which I think adds to the atmosphere a little bit. Students are excited to get the weekend going. And MSU should really run all over this team, pass all over this team, intercept all over this team, force fumbles all over this team. Whatever your definition of dominance is, that's what I expect. So the interesting things to watch, though, will be how D'Antonio rolls out his team to start this year, because there are certainly quite a few positions where there are some question marks for this Spartans. Why they're, again, in Spartan Nation's minds, being underrated and overlooked to start this season was the defensive line, which once again plummeted in terms of its depth and versatility when Enoch Smith, a redshirt freshman, I believe, decided to transfer away from this program just 3 days before the start of the regular season. But you do have the starter set, and it'll be interesting. The matchup I'm looking for, you know, Malik McDowell, in my opinion, probably will be an All-American. He is that good, just a junior, but his combination of strength and speed, I've likened it to that of a John Abraham in the NFL. It's not a perfect comparison, but McDowell, if he goes to the NFL, in my opinion, he's a 3-4 defensive end, and he's a perfect one at that. But in college, he's the perfect defensive tackle to really get that rush up the middle, and he can clog the backfield. But he can get sacks from that position, which is so important. If you can force the running back who's helping out with the blocking assignments to commit to a defensive tackle, that is vital. And it opens up the lines for guys like Demetrius Cooper, Chris Frey, and then Riley Boa, John Reschke. All of those guys can then get into the background around the edge and then cause havoc in the backfield. So I'm looking forward to seeing Kevin Williams, who was named a starter or co-starter by Mark D'Antonio in his press conference and depth chart release. I'm looking forward to see how he goes pairing alongside Malik McDowell. Also, Raekwon Williams, the redshirt freshman, a little bit bigger than Williams, a lot less experienced, but really a physical specimen who you can just admire because he has many of the traits that make Malik McDowell so impressive in that he's strong and much stronger compared to his size than you'd expect. So I'm excited to see Raekwon as well take over that middle of the defensive line. The other matchups I'm looking forward to are the rotation of the running backs for MSU. Of course, we all know about the fiasco that ensues when you've got three running backs who would start on 95% of the college football teams in this nation. I'm talking about Madre London, LJ Scott, and Gerald Holmes. And not only one can get carries, that's not how it's going to be. It's going to be a running back backfield by commission, at least in my opinion. It's going to be whoever's hot for that game. But I'm interested to see who starts off, who gets touches when, if Mark D'Antonio does plenty of what he did last year, which was going situationally, meaning that if one running back was hot for a possession, he stays in through that, but that doesn't guarantee him the rest of the game even. That means that another running back will take over after that. I think it's an interesting strategy. I also like it a lot. Some of the best, most potent combinations in the backfields have came from those 1-2 punches. If you guys recall USC in the mid-2000s, Reggie Bush and Lendale White, that was lethal. Then you look to Arkansas a little bit later when they knocked off my LSU Tigers in triple overtime and what we thought barred the Tigers from a championship competition. But of course, things just fell right for the LSU Tigers. So really interesting competition there. But Arkansas back then had Darren McFadden and Felix Jones, who went on to be a pretty successful NFL running back, and Darren McFadden now with the Cowboys, also pretty successful. So very interesting competition right there. I think there's a lot going on, a lot to look forward to. Also, which freshman will play for this team? Because if a freshman who you're looking forward to seeing does not play, they're most likely going to be redshirt. D'Antonio was pretty tight-lipped in his press conference about letting out who is actually going to play for this team game one and who is not. And, you know, with the return of Ed Davis, too, we've got a lot coming on. So it'll be very interesting. Call in if you've got any takes on the MSU football season. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I believe we've got a caller on the line who's just as interested in MSU as he is U of M, which is to say, very interested. It's Ray from Indiana. Ray, how are you doing today?
Go Rainbows! Beat those bullies!
I could have guessed the start to that. You excited for the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors season, Ray?
They're 41-point underdogs.
I know it. They probably should be, too.
Maybe that'll be compared to Appalachian State 9 years ago.
Yeah, it is. Well, I've actually got that game on right now. Let me see if I can find the spread for you.
But, oh, that's beautiful. The only thing would be better to show is the Michigan State game last week when we blocked the punt runner back on the last play of the game.
Well, they've been showing plenty of that on social media. There's a lot of buzz going around and excitement now.
I hope Jim Harbaugh was watching.
Hey, I don't know about that. He's probably focused on the current season up ahead because they're ranked pretty high.
I just had my birthday last week.
We know it.
They bought me a Stampede over there. It's double chocolate and double ice cream. You ever had one?
Have not. This is at where?
Oh,
right?
They're huge.
Where's this at?
Longhorn Steakhouse. Okay. Unbelievable. They got two double chocolate, double ice cream. And you know when I was eating that twice free, a freebie, you know what I was thinking of?
Huh.
You know what I was thinking of?
What were you thinking of?
The only thing can compare to this is like eating ice cream and cake like this is watching the Spartans beating the Bullies again this year.
Well, we got a ways to that game, right? What are you looking for about week one?
Well, I'm hoping for an Appalachian State game again and why he pulls the upset of the year. That's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah. You know, it's nothing's impossible. I wouldn't put my money on it this year. I am excited, though, Ray, for the start of the Spartan football season as well. We'll see how Tyler O'Connor performs in his first outing as the starting quarterback for Michigan State.
Are you on SportsCenter tonight? Are they going to have that game on ESPN?
It'll be on Big Ten Network come 7 o'clock.
Oh, Big Ten Network. Okay, I got that. So yeah. I'll watch them. Well, let's take it to the Bullies this year again, okay?
Hey. Right? We'll see what happens. It'll be a close one for sure.
And Tommy, I seen Tommy's halo getting roughed up last night. He's Now he's got to sit out four games. Are you guys going to put him in the station? He's, you know, he's hurting for money. Maybe you could put him up for 4 or 5 weeks.
Well, we wouldn't pay him. We would not do that. We don't have that in our budget. But
you wouldn't pay a guy that cheats like Bill Belichick and the bullies do.
Well, Tom Brady will be in Michigan, however, right? Come week 3 against Colorado, he's going to be an honorary captain for that game. So I thought you'd be very interested to hear that little nugget.
Let's hope we have another Hail Mary pass that beats him on the last play so Tommy can watch it.
Very memorable. You know what? We never know. That's the great thing about college football, Ray. Thanks for your call.
Yep. Thank you. Remember.
Bye. So, yeah, you heard Ray, of course, our notorious and infamous Michigan hater. Quite a long history there. But focusing on MSU, since Michigan, of course, takes place Saturday, MSU tonight against Furman, the South Carolina squad, I'm really looking forward to this game also. Like I mentioned, you got a lot of depth chart figuring out that's going to take place. But another player who I'm looking forward to seeing is Viontae Copeland, returning from a season-ending injury just week 1 of last year against Western Michigan, where he was very important, very crucial. He had the interception that locked that one up. And Viontae Copeland has been hailed by his teammates for his physicality, but at the same time, his speed and prowess on the wings. I'm looking forward to see how he can work to replace a Spartan secondary that will be missing a couple seniors from last year. So, hey, like I said, if you got any questions, any comments about the game coming up, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We are going to be talking to State News beat reporter for the Michigan State football team, Stephen Olshansky, coming out of the first break. But first, I want to wind back the clock to last night. I'm not talking about the Tennessee-Appalachian State game. I'm talking about high school football, which took place last night, in order not to detract whatsoever from the spectacle that will be Spartan Stadium tonight. And I was actually at the Lansing-Everett-Lansing Catholic game, 31-12 in favor of Lansing Catholic. But really great showing. And one player who I just have to call out and say that this is a Division I athlete, and he has been since he was a sophomore. This is a Division I mentality, and this is a Division I personality, is Michael Lynn III for Lansing Catholic. He transferred over to Jim Ahern's program this year after playing 2 years with the Sexton Big Reds as a mobile quarterback with a great arm on him. But I don't think I expected to see how much this kid has evolved. He's great in interviews. He's very smart. And he and Jim Ahern have really formed a tight connection. Jim Ahern spending 4 year spans where he coached college football quarterbacks to prominence. And that's Tony Poljan most recently. Of course, got the offer to the University of Minnesota. Then a while back, Cooper Rush going to Central Michigan. And I think Michael Lynn is next in that category, next in that lineage of Lansing Catholic quarterback greats. Lynn was fantastic last night. He threw for a deep bomb touchdown. But at the same time, his mobility, while avoiding hits and just making plays for his team, is unbelievable. This guy's a workhorse. You always know what he's doing when he's running it. But at the same time, there's a lot more that's coming. So, hey, we've actually got a caller right now, but we're going to ask him to wait just a second. It's a surprise. We're going to put him on hold just for a second because we are going to play the bites from that game. First, I do want to play Jim Ahern from Lansing Catholic. So we're going to hear what he said right after that 31-12 victory. So what did you see from your team tonight that lets you guys have so much success?
They played really well. I thought our line did a really good job against them. We had a couple opportunities to score early that we didn't, which, you know, I'll take the blame for that. Maybe poor play calls, but I thought the offensive line, that's 2 weeks in a row, they've played really well for us. But I thought our defense really stepped up. They are extremely tough to defense because of all the formations that they run, and they've got speed that is unbelievable. So I'm really proud of the defense. Also, they did a really fine job.
Losing so many offensive playmakers from last year, there really hasn't seemed to be too much of a drop-off. How have you managed to maintain that consistency?
The kids step up. Those kids have been around through the program, and they worked hard. Now it's their turn to shine a little bit. So they've got some kids that can play too. So Yeah, I'm happy for those guys too, because they put in a lot of time, a lot of work, and now they're getting their chance.
How have you managed as a coach to maintain that consistency over all these years, getting off to another good start?
God blessed us, I guess. I tell you, I've got some really good coaches. That's a big thing. They're well prepared when we get to the games, and that's a big part of it. That, you know, that coaches make a big difference. I don't think a lot of people realize, and one guy can't do it at all. It's the rest of the coaching staff that does it.
Michael Lynn coming in this year as a junior transfer. How has he been so far for you guys, and what sort of leadership role has he assumed?
He's learning every game. I'll probably say this after a game. Each game, he'll get a little better. He's more familiar.
He's on the offensive line.
Yeah, he's all familiar with our system now, and he'll get better. There were some things tonight that he wished he would have done different and stuff. So every game, he'll get better. But yeah, he's done well for us.
He mentioned how it helped him out to have that constant dialogue with you on the sidelines. What do you guys talk on?
Well, it makes adjustment. I missed that last couple of years because when Tony Poljan was here, he played defense, and you can't make any adjustments. Well, now I can see what he's seeing, and he tells me, and we can communicate, well, let's run this. And that's what we did at halftime, and obviously it worked, because the second half we pretty much did what we wanted to do. That's because the kids recognized what they were doing, and we were able to take advantage of that.
And for Connor Mahoney stepping up this game after being injured a little bit in the offseason, how has he managed to progress?
He's one of our top players. He's probably the fastest kid on our team, and he's a great defensive player. I mean, he had like 9 interceptions, I think, last year, and he's a great receiver, and he's a key player on our team, obviously.
That connection between Michael Lynn and Connor Maloney is something special, definitely something to watch develop over the course of this year, and I think Coach Ahern's being a little bit humble. I don't think it's just luck and blessings. This guy has consistently put together great teams. But I also got the chance to catch up with the man of the hour, Michael Lynn, the quarterback of Lansing Catholic, and that still feels weird to say, and now he's an upperclassman, which feels weird to say for him. But he talked about his game last night and how he's settling into this program. Second game with Catholic, how are you feeling like you're settling in?
I feel really good. My coaches definitely keep me prepared. We watch a lot of film. And almost every play, me and Ahern are talking about things. So,
yeah, I noticed you guys talking on the sideline. What do you mention?
I ask him, what do you want to go with? What are you seeing? And he'll ask me the same thing. And I mean, I think that's our biggest component that I love is our adjustments. We can adjust on the fly. Our line's smart enough, so we're always talking about adjustments.
For you, another year in the books after last year, how do you feel like your role also has improved and increased?
Definitely being a upperclassman now feels good to say that.
Yeah.
Being an upperclassman, you've got a bigger role because people are looking at you when times are getting hard, you know?
What made you decide on Catholic as the place to continue your football career?
I love the education. They're a number, super high number in the school system, so it's definitely school first, of course, but being under Coach Ahern meant a lot, so.
And for you, you and Connor Mahoney seem to have a great connection already. How have you formed that over such a short amount of time?
Me and him worked out a lot in the summer, and he was hurt, so, we could only do so much, but he was out there every day watching us. He was out there every day watching us, and he'd be there asking questions, paying attention, coaching our guys. And I love that about him. He's a good leader. So, having that guy on your team, that's a good component.
What did you try to add to your game for this year?
I definitely want to make, I want to keep making plays with my feet, but I want to be able to read and hit wide open dudes or hit dudes that are covered, because you can do it with both. They're going to love you.
Michael Lynn III, there you hear, the quarterback of Lansing Catholic, the new one, starting only this year. But we're going to hit our first break right now. Coming out of that, we've got a special caller on. We're going to hit first somebody who you and I might have expected to hear from today, but we're just now getting to him. And then Stephen Olshansky, beat reporter for the State News about MSU football, is on in studio. We're going to talk to him about all the great things that are going to happen tonight, hopefully, for this MSU football team. Stay tuned. You're listening to WKR AM 870. Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constant, the regular co-host and engineer of WKR's Current Sports. And we're filling in right now for Al Martin, who had flight troubles. And we actually want to hit a caller right now. Might help us out with that issue. We've got somebody named Al on the line. Al, is it? How are you doing?
Hola.
Hola, amigo. How are you doing?
What's going on, my man? Dude, I think Isaac, well, for everybody out there to probably know that, yeah, there's only one Al whose voice they hear on WKR AM 870. It's Al Marks. It is me, and I tell you what, Isaac, man, I have never been this long away from the mic, and it's weird, dude. It's really weird, man. But I'm letting everybody know I'm alive. I am alive, and you know about my travel woes, Isaac.
I do.
I'm currently I'm in wall to wall, bumper to bumper traffic right now, driving back to Chicago from Chicago, I should say, to Detroit. So I got to go to Detroit and then Lansing. So it's the first. It's so weird, man, because it's the first time. And I talked to you about this, dude. It's the first time in my career so far that I've missed the opening week of high school football. And depending on how this goes with this traffic, man, I may miss tonight's opening night game for the MSU football team. So I don't know, man. I need a woman of prayer right now. But it's so weird. I had a great time out in the Dominican Republic, as many people know by now. I mean, I was out there on groomsman duties as my fraternity brother. He jumped the broom, and it was a great time, man, but I'm ready to get back to work, dude. So I wanted to call in. It's a big day. This is exciting, man.
Isn't it?
Opening
Isn't
day
it?
For college football in mid-Michigan for Michigan State. I mean, you can't get any better than that, right?
It's the best. And, Al, I mean, just going back, last year, you and I left for Western Michigan – probably 4 hours, 3 hours before the game actually took place. And somehow, it's the travel curse. It's infamous. It's known now. I mean, it's recorded. But we were still late for that. Somehow.
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. So I believe that there's a higher power, and I believe that he's going to help you out with this one. But only you, man. Only you could have these problems.
Hey, I'm ready to get back to it, man. So yeah, I'll be probably back officially on the mic on Monday for all our listeners out there. And, you know, we have some exciting stuff coming down the pike. I mean, with high school football starting, and I do know, you just mentioned that you were at the Lansing Catholic game last night. But I've been, you know, it's so crazy. Being in another country, I had limited access, really none at all, to the internet at all. So I couldn't keep up with what was going on in the sports world. I was trying to figure out what the scores were from week one of high school football. And last night when I got back in the country, because get this, just to get, you know, I know you got to guess there, just to give you a quick rundown of what happened on the trip back. I mean, we had to go from the Dominican Republic to Miami. Then from Miami to North Carolina. We had an eight-hour layover. Everything got delayed because there was a hurricane down in Florida, as many people know. And we had an eight-hour layover. We spent the night in North Carolina. Then we had a 7 a.m. flight from North Carolina to Chicago. I had to go take an Uber to get my car from my homie's house so I could drive from Chicago to Detroit, and that's what I'm currently doing now. So it's absolutely crazy. So what I did see, though, that another big game from last night, I believe it took place last night, was the DeWitt and Grand Ledge game. The first time those two South programs have ever met, and I know it was a thriller. I think Grand Ledge put it out by a touchdown.
Yeah, 28-21. Yeah.
Right. Crazy, crazy game. So I'm ready to get back at it, man. I got plenty of stories. Going to have a lot of fun next week. Plenty of stories from the Dominican Republic. Also, exciting stuff here. We are totally revamping Current Sports TV, okay? I got some big stuff in the works for that. So stay tuned. I can't wait to get back to work, but I had a great time on vacay, all right?
Hey, so, Al, we know that we can't wait for you to come back, too. We're really looking forward to it.
Hey, man, kill the rest of this half hour, all right?
All right. Sounds good. And it's worth noting, too, that Al actually had troubles on the way over to the Dominican Republic as well. I think he had to miss, actually, the first 2 days of his vacation. But, hey, without any more delay, we've got guests patiently waiting in the studio right now. We've got Stephen Olshansky of the State News, MSU football beat writer, in the studio right now. Stephen, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I can't. It's an unbelievable chance to be on this radio show. I'm excited. It's college football. It's the number one opening day for Michigan State football. Couldn't be more excited right now.
And we're also ready for it. I know you actually have a long connection with this Spartan football team. You've been following them since a little kid. Right? It's in your family's heritage.
Yes, sir.
Why don't you explain that?
Well, my grandfather was recruited by Duffy Doherty back in the early 60s. So he was just before the 65, 66 national championship teams. And so He remembers sitting in his living room, and he comes home from high school one day, and Duffy Doherty's sitting in his couch, just right there, sitting on his couch, and he goes, "You want to play for Michigan State?" And he was undecided because he had committed earlier to U of D Mercy. He committed earlier to them. His grand, as soon as Duffy left, his grand or my great grandmother looked him in the eyes and said, "You have to go there." And so his decision was made from right then. So.
Huh? Wow. Did Duffy Doherty sleep over or anything like that?
No, none of that.
Just clarifying. But first off, I mean, it's the opening day, so we got to focus on this. What gets you most excited for college football season here in mid-Michigan?
I've been coming here a long time, and you always get that same feeling on game day. It feels like a lot of people describe it as Christmas. I would say it's one better than Christmas. As soon as I hear the band or as soon as I see them walking down the street, I know college football's back. That is probably the number one indicator to me that college football, it's time to go.
The game against Furman, you heard me mention, FCS opponent, 4-7 last year in a lower conference. It should be a blowout, but so should have Tennessee versus Appalachian State. What are the chances that this one actually comes a little bit closer than people are expecting?
Rather slim, I would think, but they do have a very experienced quarterback in Reese Hannon. He's 6'2", 212, and he's a redshirt senior, been a four-time captain. And last year, over his career, in 29 starts, he's had 5,274 passing yards. So
impressive. Yeah.
The guy, he is capable of making those throws. However, I don't think he'll have any time with MSU's defense. So if Michigan State's defense firing all cylinders as they should from the linebacker position, it's not going to be a very smooth ride for Furman, and it should be it shouldn't even be very close tonight.
And Reese Hannon coming off an injury too, you can best believe that MSU is not going to try to key in on that, but at the same time, he might be a little bit slow, a little bit gimpy coming out of the gates. So very interesting point right there. Also, I want to look into this game from the MSU perspective. What positional battles have yet to be resolved?
Well, definitely the number one, I think, at that one would be definitely on the spot with, where is it? Oh, Chris Frey and Andrew Dowell over who will get the star spot for the linebacker position. I would think Chris Frey, because he has the more experience, would get the start over. But Andrew Dowell is definitely a freak of nature, and yeah. He showed himself in flashes last year. I'm sure he'll get into the game tonight, and that will be the one match or the one position group that I'm keying on for sure.
Offensive linemen, we've heard so much talk about them losing 3 of the 5 starters from last year and really needing a lot of turnover. It's still experienced, but at the same time, not experienced as starters. You've got a bunch of second stringers from last year who are filling in. What should we look for against Furman, and is there too much that you can take out of games like this?
I always throw the caveat when everybody ever asks me about the first game of the year is always you're never going to be able to tell, especially if it's an FCS game. And even if it's like Oklahoma playing Ohio State, that you're not going to be able to tell who's going to win that one. Or you're not going to be able to tell much from that one either because it's so close. It's so early in the year. On the offensive line, I think the best thing to look forward to or to look to would be Cody Keeler. Mm-hmm. At center, because if being shifted over there, he took a little time there last year, but now he assumes all the roles from. I would think would be the biggest thing in how he deals with calling the play or being on time with the snap and all that, and what's his connection with Tyler O'Connor, and actually that how much time Tyler O'Connor has mm-hmm. is probably going to be the biggest factor.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You mentioned FCS teams coming in. Kind of limits the amount of information that you can really extrapolate from games like this. Are you a fan of teams starting off with cupcake games like this one? And of course, I think this is the last year actually that will happen in Spartan Stadium.
Yeah, no, I am actually not a fan of cupcake games coming in there. I don't think there's any excitement in going up 35-0 at halftime. I remember being here. Eastern Michigan is not a cupcake. They're not an FCS team.
Yeah, they're not the standard that necessarily Furman is.
Right,
yeah.
But I remember that game and having like a 35-0 at halftime. I'm like, what do I want to do for the next half an hour? You know,
yeah.
So it's like you can't get much out of these games. I don't like watching them because it's going to be lopsided. It's exciting because you get to see them score some points, but other than that, it's not very exciting. I'd rather Michigan State started off like against a Bama or an LSU or possibly Tennessee, which might have played in our favor yesterday. But
definitely might have. And position by position, you already mentioned a few of the possible contenders for these spots. But where is MSU the strongest, and where do they need the most work?
I think they're the strongest, definitely at linebacker. Or would you ask me about offense?
Both.
Okay, both defense. On defense, I think they're strongest at linebacker with their D-backs coming in close second with Vaionte Copeland. Uh-huh. On offense, I think they're strongest at running back. I don't think there's any question about that rotation. You saw all three of them last year be workhorses, especially Gerald Holmes in the second half of most of the Big Ten season, where he led the team in all categories in rushing yards and touchdowns and attempts or carries. So you can definitely see Gerald Holmes in. You'll see a lot of him tonight, I'm sure. You'll see a lot of Madre London again. And then you'll see definitely L.J. Scott, I think, is everybody's fan favorite. Yeah. But I don't know.
After Iowa pretty much sealed that. Yeah.
Exactly. And I remember when he bursted onto the scene against Oregon, mm-hmm. you know, the home, and when he busted through for the big game. But other than that, I don't know if he has that breakaway speed. I know they're looking for that. But I think they're strongest at running back currently.
All right. And freshmen, you know, you've got a lot of freshmen coming in. And Mark D'Antonio said in his most recent press conference that we will actually see which ones play and which ones don't. Who are you expecting to have a big impact and see the field not get the red shirt? And who are you expecting to kind of get relegated for one season?
Well, one guy already with the red shirt currently on would be Raekwon Williams. So this is red shirt freshman season. Be the biggest, I guess, freshman technically that mm-hmm. I'd be looking forward to see how he and Kevin Williams will switch out. And if he's you described him earlier as, you know, kind of like a Malik McDowell. Yeah. And that's what I'm excited to look for. I think he turns into a Malik McDowell, but not this year.
Yeah.
And then I would go other freshman-wise, let's see here. Donnie Corley, obviously mm-hmm. Highly touted out of Detroit King there, especially with the last second touchdown. I think when MSU fans saw that one was key for everybody. I think Donnie Corley will be the best freshman receiver on the team currently. I think fans should be excited to see him for sure. He's got Tyler O'Connor. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No.
Tyler O'Connor, he had alluded to that Donnie Corley's got the leaping ability of Aaron Burbridge.
Wow.
So it's going to be interesting to see how much time Donnie Corley gets and who how often they go to him and if he's the real deal. I know you can't get too much out of Furman if he goes off against Ohio State or something, then you'll know, but yeah, you should be excited to watch him.
And I remember a particular game last year against Air Force where it looked like a preview of the Olympics with Aaron Burbridge's jumping ability and aptness right there. I also think one position that, or one place where MSU can really make a difference and feel the factor that these freshmen will bring in is special teams. And fun fact for Furman, J.C. Hollingsworth actually is their kicker and punter. He handles both the responsibilities. Who do you expect to be the kick returner for this team? And what would it come down to?
Definitely the kick returner from MSU is definitely, I think, RJ Shelton's still locking that one down. I think if they get out big, though, you probably will see Daryl Stewart and probably Monte Nicholson filled back on those kick returns. Punt return-wise, they still have RJ Shelton as that one. His versatility and his speed is unmatched, I think. So they'll definitely field a bunch of he'll field all of those kicks tonight, I'm pretty sure.
Biggest position, captain on the team. Did MSU make the right choice going with Tyler O'Connor?
Oh, yeah, I believe so. Demetrius Cox had told us, all gathered there, that he was like, if Tyler O'Connor is a running back or a wide receiver, there's no doubt that he's captain anyway. So mm-hmm. it doesn't – and that was the one thing that irked, I think, some of the reporters was the second question to Tyler O'Connor. It wasn't about himself. Yeah. It was like, congratulations, how does it feel? And the next question was, so does a quarterback need to be captain? You already know they're trying to trap him in those and try to bring up Connor Cook again. But, I think they made the right decision. His teammates at Riley Bulla said, you know, they're all vocal. Demetrius Cox, they're like, yeah, he's undoubtedly the most vocal guy on the offensive side. And I think he has the trust of his offensive line, the respect of his offensive line. So they made the right choice for sure.
Just a couple more questions. We're talking with Stephen Olshansky, beat reporter for the State News, about MSU football and their first game of the season. You can see it tonight on Big Ten Network at 7 p.m. But John Reschke, I was talking to you about him yesterday, actually. And he had a very interesting comment about the team's goals for this year. He said they didn't want to permit Furman a single first down.
Not a single first down. They looked – it was funny because it was like an off color. It was like – not an off color, like an off – you know, it wasn't even like trying to bring it up. And they kind of like goaded it into him. And he was like, well, if we really want to make a statement, we need – to hold them to first down. We have the capability of no first downs, and we think we can do it. And so I remember looking at each other, everybody with these wide eyes, they're like, whoa, did he actually just say that? And so I was wondering, is it a motivational tool? Mm-hmm. And then was it or was he actually serious? And I believe it's a little bit of both, that if he has a lot of respect for his teammates and their capability. So I think he, if he gets those guys going, they could probably, I don't think it'll happen, but you know, I like the little motivational tool he threw out there for him, for sure.
Definitely. And you recently wrote a column stating that Mark D'Antoni and the program should be grateful, actually,
yes,
that they got number 12, that they're being overlooked, that they're below Michigan, that they're underhyped, if anything. Why is that?
Well, I go back to the 2013 season. Oh. I remember this season reminds me of that quite a bit, because you have, you know, a bunch of questions at different positions and a new quarterback. And I remember them winning the Rose Bowl. Nobody, like, I remember they're coming out of the 2012 season into the 2013 season. Athlon Sports had picked them to go 4-4. Picked them to go 4-4 in 2013 in the conference, ended up winning the conference.
Yeah.
Not a single loss in conference, won the Big Ten Championship, went on to win the Rose Bowl and beat the Buckeyes in the Big Ten Championship game. It's those things where the Spartans are always, if they're underlooked, they always play better. In 2014, they were kind of the favorite to win the Big Ten, and then the Buckeyes come out of Columbus into East Lansing and lay down the hardwood on them, and that's it. So whenever they're in the spotlight, it seems they don't respond very well. But when they're out of the spotlight, when nobody thinks anything of them, they're on top of their game, they come out of nowhere, and they win. So it has brought a bunch of Spartan fans some of the greatest joys when the team is not hyped. And what comes with a lot of that hype, too, is you get, like, those programs where everybody gets, like, if something, one game goes wrong, it's a bunch of questions. Either the question, like, Urban Meyer, if Ohio State loses, like, if Ohio State loses an upset, or even if they lose to Oklahoma early on this year, it's going to be like, what the heck's going on at your program there?
Yeah.
But, like, if, you know, here it's like, oh, if they lose to Oklahoma, it was, like, a good fight, you know. Mm-hmm. I can see they had questions after the Bama game, obviously. I mean, you can't, but
not going to avoid that after allowing more than 40 points in a playoff game. So, finally, last question. Stephen Olshansky, beat reporter for the State News regarding MSU football. Everybody says within the sports journalism industry that score predictions are for idiots. So I'm going to have to ask you to just step over here and put on the jester's cap for a second. What do you predict for this upcoming game?
I think Tyler O'Connor definitely shows you why he is the captain and why he is the unquestioned number one quarterback on the depth chart. It probably about second quarter, you'll see a corner pass over to one of those tight ends, so that Connor Cook and Josiah Price usually tie it up, and then it'll probably end up this game about, I'm going to go 38-10.
Okay. I've got even further than that. You'll hear my prediction, actually, right out of the second break. But, Stephen, thank you so much
for
joining
me.
And how can people read your work?
Go to statenews.com, and then you can sometimes I'm on the homepage, if I'm a little big time sometimes. But you can always look me up at, you just type in my name, Stephen Olshansky, and you can also read me on Twitter at S. Olshansky, and that would be capital S, capital O, Olshansky. You can read it on Twitter and on Facebook. They're always up there. So
great. All right, Stephen Olshansky, thank you so much for joining me today. We're going to hit our second break now. Coming out of that, we're going to go to Reflection Friday, remembering the best of the week. Also, you'll hear my score prediction for what's set to be maybe not too much of an exciting game, but football's back. So we're going to talk about MSU Furman a little bit more anyway. Just 6 minutes left on the show. You're listening to WKR's Current Sports. Look at the man up in the
steeper. Hi, I'm Armin Alney. On the next To the Point, the longest-running conflict in the Western Hemisphere ended last week when the government of Colombia made peace with communist FARC rebels. It's a dramatic achievement after 220,000 deaths over 52 years. But can victimized civilians coexist with hardened mountain guerrillas living next door? Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
To the Point, this afternoon at 2 on AM 870 WKAR.
Welcome back to WKR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constant, filling in for Al Martin, who you heard earlier on in the hour. He missed his flight. Or he didn't miss it. It got delayed. It's not his fault. It's just the curse. It's the curse's fault. But we just got done finishing up a chat with Stephen Olshansky, a beat reporter for the State News about MSU football. And he gave us our score prediction for the day from an expert. He gave it a 38-10 line in favor of the Spartans. I'm not going to be so generous. I'm seeing a bunch of 41-3s, a bunch of 41-7s, a bunch of 40-somethings. This is an FCS team that went 4-7 last year. You know, people are kind. People are generous. I'm not. I'm going to give it 56-3 in favor of MSU. I think MSU also has depth on the offense. I think the backup quarterbacks, you'll see guys like Damian Terry enter the game third quarter probably. He'll be fine. Brian Lewerke might even see it a little bit. Think of it as preseason. So I'm sorry, but it would be easy to give this game a nice friendly scoreline where it's somewhat competitive for half a quarter. It's not going to be. The Spartans 56-3 is what I've got. We've got one more caller. Time for one more. And he's on the line right now, Mike from Saginaw. Mike, how you doing today?
How you doing there? Michigan State, since they playing Furman, and they student body's only 2,200. I just want to know if would a Big Ten school, would they go to an FCC school and play a game with them?
No, never. You would never see that. And the reason why is these Big Ten schools are able to pay FCS schools a little bit of money. And the FCS schools, that's probably their revenue for the years. I've heard of contracts from LSU, my hometown, or not my hometown, my, I guess, home college.
Your adopted home.
But, yeah, exactly, my adopted hometown. But LSU we used to pay, I think, FCS schools and small Division I schools about $2 million for one game to come and play in Death Valley. I think MSU probably does a similar type of agenda.
So they won't be playing Lafayette, Louisville, or Tulane, or some school like that.
No, I don't think you'd see it. Teams are pretty much responsible for their own non-conference schedule, so I think you'd continue to see them playing cupcakes when possible, unless it's a big-money national spotlight game, in which case they can get some revenue stream from that.
Okay.
All right.
All right, then.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Then.
You too.
Thank
and
you.
Hope to see you watching the game tonight. We will be in the house. Al, hopefully, fingers crossed, and I in Spartan Stadium, 7 p.m. If you're not able to attend, you can catch it on the TV, on the tube. Big Ten Network, 7 p.m. tonight, MSU versus Furman. Like I said, 56-3. Watch out for that scoreline. That about wraps it up, but not before. We've got Reflection Friday to remember the best of the week. Reflection Friday starts now. Only one thing I can really reflect on this week, and that's the Colin Kaepernick decision to sit down for the national anthem. Last night, he was actually joined by another player across the league, as well as Eric Reed, his teammate. And instead of sitting, they kneeled. And I think that's the perfect way to do it. Provides proper reverence for soldiers, but at the same time, protests your cause. I think Colin Kaepernick did a good job. And my summary of it, to wrap it up quickly, would be, yes, I think sitting during the national anthem is a little bit disrespectful to those who serve overseas. At the same time, was it not effective? Was it not necessary? It did get us talking more about the racial dynamic and structure of the United States, more so than actual killings from either side of the other. It got us talking. Colin Kaepernick did his job, and I actually applaud him for it. I never thought I would. But that wraps it up for this edition of Current Sports. I'm Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin. He'll be back in this chair on Monday. But I really thank you for listening. Thanks to Stephen Olshansky, beat reporter for the state news about Michigan State football, joining us today. And thanks to all our callers. You've been listening to me, Isaac Constance, on WKAR's Current Sports on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing.